Right. Let's just jump in.
Yep, let's do it.
Alright, three. Oh, sugar. Two, one. Welcome, dear listeners. This is episode 63 of the Devon Dice Podcast. This episode, recorded the 21st of January 2019, is brought to you by some generic sponsor card, because they have wings. And not forgetting our regular sponsor, Meeple's Corner. On tonight's show... Oh, I've lost my flow. Right, I'm your host, Joel Wright. And joining me tonight, it's so exciting, I found him! I dusted him off, I found him, and I put him back on the podcast. It's your lovable co-host...
Sam, hello.
Sam Freeman. Yay, he's back.
Yeah. One night only. Well, not one night only, I'm sure, but each week as it comes. It was so busy before Christmas that there was just no chance for about 2 months before Christmas I had any time to do anything. So, okay at the moment. So let's hope it stays that way.
Yeah, everyone wanting their Christmas websites updating and things like that.
I had two massive projects that needed to be done before Christmas finished, and just about managed to get them done. So,
we made you apologies for them. I'm sure they understood.
Yeah, good old those three listeners that cared. I'm sure.
Lewis was missing you.
Oh, that's right then. Is he over in New Zealand now?
He is. Yeah, I think he's exploring the outback somewhere. Right. Hold on, sorry, wrong place again.
Good morning to you, Lewis.
It is, will be so strange to think about that.
Yeah, and it's summer.
Yeah, can't get my head around. It's nice to be back on schedule again for a change. It probably won't last, as I have another big assignment coming up. So we'll see how this goes. Some bookkeeping. I put some more videos out, some unboxings, and just recently, it's probably gone way past it now, but one of my videos has reached 5,000 views.
I don't believe it.
Yeah.
Which one was it?
The pandemic playthrough I did at the tabletop gaming event in London.
Also, a relatively recent one. It's not like it's taken 5 years to get to there.
No. I can't understand why it's done it so well, because, I mean, at first it was because mine was the very first one on Board Game Geek of the game. But, I mean, it's still growing quite a lot, so...
Is that the 10th anniversary?
No, that's the Fall of Rome.
Oh, Fall of Rome one, yeah.
So, yeah. And it's all very well, and amount of comments I get on it's amazing. So and nice comments, no trolling yet.
Yeah.
So and the other one that's doing very well, it's really recent, is the unboxing of booster packs from Keyforge. So.
I'm sure that's great, and I know a lot of people like Keyforge. But I was painting a bedroom wall on Friday, and I quite literally sat on the bed and watched it dry. Rather than watch 10,000 packs of Keyforge get opened.
Well, some people like that sort of stuff, and some people like watching paint dry. Some people do. I think I kind of hid some tidbits in there, like I didn't quite cover up deck QR codes. So I just kind of left them in there. So might entice people to sneak along and get a quick snap of it, but you never know. But some people like that sort of thing.
I guess the different thing I suppose with Keyforge, I suppose, is that all the cards are going to be different, aren't they? So that's the point. So each one will be unique. Cool. Any kind of humorous names of characters?
The one Hangover the Infallible was quite.
That's my friend Darren.
Yeah, really? Or are you just winding me up?
No, well, he's always got a hangover, so it must be about right.
Okay. Yeah. Conductor... Oh, what was it? Conductor Bison or something like that? That's a weird one. Just strange, strange, normal kind of name. Something like that. So, there's some names in there I couldn't even pronounce. It's probably quite funny how I pronounce some of them, but that's just me.
Mm.
So, yeah, and I'm getting some good people telling me, because I'm not really knowing what I'm looking at quite yet. Some people coming on and telling me, oh, that deck's quite good, and this deck's quite good, so which is quite nice.
Mm.
Yes.
Cool.
Oh, so why have you been away then, Sam? What have you been up to?
Because November and December were so busy, I didn't really get to play very much. I went to like two game nights in the 2 months. It was just kind of stupid. I barely got to play anything. Thank heaven for Richard and Joe, because I used to be able to get at least every other Saturday for a couple hours or something, I'd get something to play with them. But the big ones I want to talk about, I'll make it fairly recent ones. The main one was an early copy of Wingspan that Chris had come in and I got to have a game of. That's the new game from Stonemaier Games. And I'm just going to say now, I've started making room in my shelves. I'm getting myself a copy of that. It is a brilliant game. It's absolutely superb. Thematically speaking, it's a sort of bird set collection game where you're sort of ornithologist or whatever, building up a collection of birds, either ones you've spotted or ones you're attracting to your... They say aviary, I think, but it seems a bit weird. I think it's more like you've got your environment, you're attracting them to you or something. I don't quite understand. I think of it more as like a bird spotting style game. But the idea is it's almost like an engine building, tableau, set collector kind of affair going on. Multiple actions that you can select each turn, and whether it be sort of playing bird cards from your hand, or collecting food from the bird feeder. You need the food in order to play the bird cards, i.e. attract the right type of bird with the right type of food. And you can also kind of get eggs onto your birds, which allow you to sort of do extra actions or to play birds further up your tableau. So basically everything gets more and more expensive, but you kind of build an engine that provides you the resources you need to do it. But ultimately, the thing that it comes down to is just the production value. I can't remember how many cards exactly. Something like 170 different unique cards, each one with a completely different bird with completely different artwork on it. The quality of the cards is brilliant. The quality of the board and everything is brilliant. They've got these little funky little sort of... I'd imagine they're probably plastic, but they feel like kind of clay eggs in different colours. There's like a little dice tower, which is actually a bird feeder, which you chuck your dice into and it comes out into like a bird feeder. It's pretty cool. The dice are giant wooden chunky, probably like Seasons style size, that kind of giant blocky woody kind of style dice. And even the rulebook's even got a linen paper finish, thick linen paper finish. It's insane. But yeah, it's just fabulous. I absolutely loved my first play of it. I know a lot of people sort of talk about how it's potentially a kind of Terraforming Mars-ish style game, but I've never played Terraforming Mars, so I wouldn't have a clue. But whatever it is, it's one that I really enjoyed, and I'm hoping Chris will open up pre-orders for it again soon, because I want mine in there for it.
Wow, that's a massive massive ad for it, really. I mean,
yeah, I know
Chris was saying he really enjoyed it when he played it. So
yeah. Well, it's I mean, it's quite a quick game as well. So it's one of those games where there is a start player. You're playing rounds. There's four separate rounds, and if you're playing a four player game, then everyone's going to get to be first player once, like, you know. But the other thing I like about it is that you have at the start of the game, you have eight sort of cute action cubes, if you like, and that's the number of actions you can take during the game. And we're in the round. Once those cubes are gone, that's the end of the round, and you restart. But each round, you'll lose one of your action cubes. So you start with eight actions, and by the fourth round, you're only going to be taking five actions because you've lost three cubes up to that point. And they kind of go onto a scoring board to sort of count down the rounds. So there's like a variable scoring mechanic between the rounds. So for the first round, you might be after most eggs on water birds, The second one, you might be after the most eggs in forest birds, that kind of stuff. And so whoever's got the most, second most, third most, you put your action cubes on those tracks. So it kind of gives you some bonus score. That way it counts down both the rounds and also kind of reduces your action ability. It feels really well balanced and fine-tuned. Because obviously by the time you've got to the third and fourth rounds, you're going to have a tableau of birds that are providing you lots of things. So you don't necessarily need as many actions anyway, or if you did have that many actions, you just, everyone will end up with, you know, a full tableau of birds and crazy points and stuff. So it was really good. And as an example of that, one of the powers that I didn't have in my tableau that everyone else in the game had, was one where if someone takes the action of putting eggs on your birds, you get to put an egg on your bird as well, or two eggs on your bird or something.
Right.
I didn't have that. Everyone else did. So I was constantly at a disadvantage for the eggs. I think I did come last, or next to last, anyway. I felt like that was one thing I just missed out on, was getting one of those birds. But, I don't think I ever really had the opportunity to get that particular card. You have like the ability, there's like a tableau of three cards that you can pick from when you're claiming bird cards to bring into your hand to put out onto your board in a future turn, or you can draw from the top of the deck, and I don't think, and that's kind of partly, I suppose there's partly a luck element in that in terms of what bird cards come out, I think that's just partly luck of the draw. And even though there's 170 odd different birds, they all share, there's like sets that have the same powers, so there might be like 15 or 20 of them that have that particular egg power, and I just got a bit of bad luck and didn't manage to get one of those, but I had other powers that others didn't have, you know, so it was really good. Anyway, I'm not going to labour the point, I'm not making much sense, but it is very good, and I'm going to be getting a copy.
at this point you're just twittering on.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just I'm chatting on a wing and a prayer.
Yeah. That's awesome. Wow. No, I mean, when I saw him announce it, the theme did not attract me at all, and so I kind of shunned it slightly. I mean, I really, after your praise and after Chris's praise, I would love to try this out and see what all the hype is about. But I kind of get this feeling now, you know, like Days of Wonder used to have that, they release a game a year. Yeah. And everyone would be hyped to see what the next new game is they're bringing out. I think Stonemaier is now taking over that mantle. And yeah, everyone's always pumped to find out what the next new game is. He does really well in hyping the new games and building up that hype. And I think now, really, he is the new Days of Wonder. One, because they're making exceptional games. And two, like, the component quality, like you're describing all the components in there, they keep taking it up a notch.
Yeah.
And that's what Days of Wonder used to do.
Yeah. Well, Days of Wonder are kind of, they're kind of average now.
Yeah.
In terms of production, yeah, quality, where, yeah, you're right, Stonemaier are kind of, they're pushing that boundary a little bit more in terms of the artwork, in terms of the kind of component quality, card quality and everything. The price of Wingspan is nuts too. I think Chris had it on for $37.95 on pre-order, which I think might have been slightly discounted. You're looking at maybe £40. But £40 in today's market, is that's not expensive. And the quality of the production you're getting, it's leaps and bounds above a lot of other games. I've got Ex Libris, for instance, from Renegade, which finally managed to pick up a copy of that one. And that's like a £55 game at retail. And the component quality is good, but it's not like super. Wingspan's £15 cheaper than that, and is top draw, you know. So he's doing something right, old Jamie Stegmaier. And like you say, he's doing the same Days of Wonder thing of releasing only one big game a year, or maybe two by the end of the year this year, because obviously Wingspan's come out like this month. Wouldn't surprise me they will have another one in a little while, but last year was the Scythe year, or the last couple of years have been the Scythe years, and now it could be Wingspan. I could see this one as well having lots of expansion potential, because the birds are all kind of North American birds, so it's going to be quite easy for them to go, and now we have the Africa pack, and now we have the Australia pack, and now we have the European pack. And you know, it just feels like they'll easily be able to introduce new birds and new powers and stuff like that. So Yeah.
Awesome.
Great. I'm looking forward to it. So, yeah. Cool. Anyway, how about yourself?
Well, I finally, after berating and shouting and getting very angry about not receiving a Kickstarter, about a week later, that Kickstarter did arrive at my doorstep. And that is the Fireball Island Curse of Vulkar.
Vulkar.
Something like that. So, yeah, that finally turned up. 4 months after, it feels like months after the distributors had it in their warehouse. First, of course, I did my unboxing videos, which I am still editing at the minute, because there's quite a lot of stuff, and I finally got to play it on Friday, and it's actually quite a nifty little game. Not little, it's quite big actually. It's not a like heavy thinking brain burner. It's not, it's kind of a Euro-ish because you're collecting stuff for points. It's a card play and you move your guys around and you play cards to like take that kind of card elements on people to stop them moving, and then you got the dexterity element. So there's two ways of knocking people down. There's chucking marbles down Vulkar, and that's a kind of random potluck. You can kind of line it up if you turn Valka's head a bit on top of the mountain, and that you can kind of line it up and try and guess that it might hit. But there's also these kind of ember balls that are sat on the island around, and you can have a go in pushing, not flicking, these embers off their perches and trying to knock other people around. So that takes a bit more skill to do on that. But we had fun. We quite enjoyed it, and it's very simple. It's very fun. It's very in your face. I think they've done a good job of bringing this game back. They probably could have done better. There's a few little bits I'm just looking into, like some of the paths don't quite line out, where they've got chutes running down where they've formed the island. What really takes the mick for Kickstarter, for backing this on Kickstarter, is they were saying, oh, don't worry, you're getting these special deluxe marbles that retail won't get. These marbles are crap. I've never seen such bad marbles. I think I stated on the video when we're doing it, I get better marbles in crackers.
Wow.
They're not even round. They're not even formed properly. They just look like they've blown some glass, chopped it, and I don't know. It's just ridiculous. I'd rather use these ones that come in the core box than the ones they actually sent us as a Kickstarter reward package, or for thank you for back in Kickstarter. So that's a bit of a slap in the face. And they now admitted that it's not their best effort, and it was a kind of a quick we promised you these, this is what we come up with kind of thing, and not really checking the source and supply of it. So it was a shame about that. I played with you as a Kickstarter backer. We got this deck of cards, which is like the treasure trove, which is more souvenir cards. So throughout the game, you have action cards that you play to move and do stuff, but then you also get gain souvenir cards, which are kind of play when you need to. It tell you when you can play it, and it usually like helps you out or hinders your opponents. Take that ish, and you get a load more of these to add into the deck, which some are really good. And then it also comes with these injuries cards, which if you get knocked down by the marbles rolling down the island, then the person that does that gets to take a treasure off of you. Now, instead of losing treasures, you could take one of these injury cards, which impede you a bit more than normally, and you can keep taking these injuries and keep like impeding yourself even more. So those are quite nice. It all worked quite well, I thought, and enjoying the game. I've not actually played it with the family yet. I keep meaning to get around to it, but again, it's just so busy at the minute, it's just ridiculous. So So yeah, not too bad. I need to get the other expansions out, which just add tons more chaos, I think. But that's what the game is. It's a big, massive chaos. And the other thing that's annoying me, people are complaining about the box. Have you seen the complaints about the box?
No.
So basically, they went with this old retro-style box for games, and they used to come in, and you lift the box up, and it kind of folds.
Right.
And then you can actually flatten the lid and the box down flat. Bit weird. So they went with this type. That doesn't bother me. What really bothers me is I can't get even the core stuff back in the box after I've... And I'm really trying to figure out a way of doing this. So not only I've got all these expansions, which I've got to keep in their own boxes, I can't really get the core set back in. It's all everywhere. So it's a bit of a bad design flaw, I think, in that, really.
Yeah.
So...
Oh, that's a shame.
I liked it so far. Let's not get that wrong.
Good. Right, I'm kind of glad I didn't continue with the backing of it, just because it was such a huge thing and quite expensive and everything. And I did fear that it would be one of those you play it once or twice and then you're really done with it type games, like sort of novelty factor a bit. You know, rose-tinted glasses were all good and everything, but I'll be interested to try it and see, because I really do want to play it. Maybe on one of those next sort of credit and gaming nights. I'll be interested in 6 months time or something if you're still sort of keen to play. I've got a thing, it'll be one of those games that will be just a fun chuck about. There's no real seriousness to it. It's not like it's a heavy strategy game. It's just a kind of late Friday night have some fun game. We'll see. That's what I'm kind of thinking it might be anyway.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it'll work with my family. Hopefully they'll take to it. The boy's really keen to play it. For you don't have a family. Sorry to rub that in. I could see, like, with you, it would have come out a couple of times with your mates and then gathering dust on your shelf and being the next purge. But, I think this will stay around for a while until the family gets bored.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Good. Only other one I had to talk about was Fleet the Dice Game. I don't know if that's been on anyone's radar, quite frankly.
No, I didn't even realise I did a dice game. But
yeah, anyway. it was the one game last year that teased me out of my Kickstarter not backing anything in 2018, and I did back that, and I'm kind of glad I did. I do like Roll and Writes and stuff like that, and I've got Viva Java, the coffee game, the dice game, the longest game name in the world ever, I quite fancied this one mainly because I quite like the Fleet game. My mate Darren that I talked to you about earlier on, he's got Fleet, and we enjoy playing that from time to time. And we both kind of, what's the name of that show that was on Discovery? The crab fishing one.
I don't know.
Deadliest Catch.
Deadliest Catch.
Yeah, big fans of Deadliest Catch. We kind of felt like it was maybe going to be that kind of game. And it, to some degree, it is kind of... Fleet came about a little bit as a result of the popularity of that show. So Fleet the Dice Game felt like it was a no-brainer for me. It was cheap, and it looked like it was going to be fun. So I backed it, and it arrived 2 months early, amazingly. Very good spec. Everything's correct and as it should be. I've played it two or three times now, I think. Three times. Pretty sure I played it three times. Played it wrong every single time, because the rule book is officially one of the worst rule books. It's really difficult to understand exactly what you're meant to be doing a lot of the time. There's no examples of play to show you exactly what you're meant to be doing. So every time we've played, I've actually played where we've all had far too much money, because we were playing it completely wrong. So it'll be interesting now that I know the proper rules to see how that plays out in future games. But it's really good. You get like two sheets of paper, and on one sheet is all your boats. So you've got five different types of fish that you can catch, and on the other one you've got like your harbour and the wharf and the market and stuff like that, where there's various buildings that you can kind of build, and there's also your king crab boats, which you can only do via the wharf, if that makes sense. And you have a pool of dice, so you have two pools of dice. You have fish dice and you have town dice, and there's two phases of rolling. So you first off, you do your your boat dice, and there'll be various symbols for like shrimp and cod and swordfish and oysters and something else. I can't remember what the other one is now. Lobsters. And each one of those different fish, as you kind of complete, I should say, when you roll the dice, each player in turn picks one of the dice to draft essentially from that pool of dice. And then whichever dice is left over, there'll always be one more dice to the number of players. Everyone gets to take that final dice. And when you take one of those dice, you basically chalk off the next, or pencil in the next mark on that track on your piece of paper. And as you fill up squares on those tracks, you get to activate fishing licenses, which give you perks, and or launch boats, which catch you fish. And essentially, you're just going through 10 rounds to see how many fish you can catch, how many buildings you can complete, and how much money you can make, and all of it, to some degree or another, is worth points. So you get points for every fish, you get points for, you know, every 10 coins or whatever, and you get points for every level 3 license you've activated, and all that sort of stuff. I mean, it's fairly dry, quite frankly, but it looks pretty. The dice are really nice. It's got a funky dice tower that's shaped like a lighthouse. So it's good. It's good fun. So much fun that the air's dead. Hello?
Hello. No, so I had to turn my heater off. I was roasting. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's right. I was just done. I think the dice game's good. As a roll and write, it's good. It feels like it's a little bit more... Like a lot of modern rights, they have a bit of a reputation of being a lightweight, fillery type thing. And this one kind of bridges that towards slightly more strategic gameplay, which is quite nice. I guess it's a little bit like Welcome To, a tiny bit. There's a bit more strategic thinking about which things you're going to, you know, when you're taking a particular or colouring in a particular marker or whatever, you're thinking a little bit more strategically about it. And I think that's what this one does, which is quite nice. As opposed to it being a relative, it doesn't really matter which way I go. The luck of the dice is going to define whether I get this finished or not. In this one, there's a lot more mitigation for it, and so therefore, there's a bit more strategy, which is quite nice.
Cool. And my last one I'm going to talk about is Solina, something like that. It's the new Pearl Games game that came out. The funky game with holes in the cards, and this game is really beautiful. Mm. I was at Chris's shop one gaming evening, and it kept on looking at me, and it was looking at me with these puppy dog eyes. And so I said, "Okay, I'll take this home with me and look after it." And yes, glad I did. It is a lovely game to play. It's very simple. The basic premise is this tiny planet that's stopped revolving, and really, I think if you went scientifically into it, the planet wouldn't survive, I don't think. But anyway, the planet stopped revolving, and you are traveling around this planet from hovering island to hovering island, collecting resources to fill contracts on either the night side or the dark side. So it's this kind of traveling board kind of thing that rotates as you move around it, if you understand. I don't know if you remember seeing pictures of this before, Sam.
I remember seeing the cover. It's really gorgeous looking cover.
Vincent Detrait is the artist on it, and yes, you can tell that. But no, the cover is awesome. It's like a watercolour feature. So, it's really simple design. You basically, each player has 16 cards, all the same cards, and you, on your turn, play a card down on a space that is available. There's laws to that, like you either play next to this big plastic airship that's in the middle, or you play next to a card you've already placed. When you place it, there's a number in the top of the card, either 0, 1, or 2, and you get that resource that will show up through this hole in the center, basically the resource from the island. So you either get one resource or two resources, which go onto your own little airship board that's in front of you. And yes, if you play one with a 0 card on it, that basically makes you move the airship a space forward, which then in turn the board at the back of this game board lifts off and flips over and goes to the front. Does that make sense? So you've got this revolving board. And as you keep moving forward, it's like a kind of conveyor belt, in a way, moving along. But like, so it would be dark at the back of you, and then it would flip over and it'd be light. So you got this kind of, you're going around the planet and you're going through night and dark and night and dark. It's quite clever, very beautiful. But then your cards that were at the back, if you've got any cards at the back, if they come off, another little action might happen at the bottom of these cards. And it might give you more resources or more points or things like that. And if you play a card onto a city and you've got enough resources, well, if you've got to have resources to complete an objective, like a order token, and you take that order token and put it on your airship, and those give you points throughout a game. And that's basically it. I mean, once everyone's played their 16 cards, that's the game over. And it's very good, and it can get very nasty because people start putting their cards where you wanted to put them. And you have to then spend more resources because you don't have to play next to the ship or next to your cards. You can go further out, but you have to pay extra resources to get that far out, which can be a struggle when you've just got enough for that one one order. But so yeah, really liking it. There is an advanced way of playing it, but I've not got around to that yet. I'm still playing the basic kiddie version of it, which is still good fun. So yeah, and the artwork's beautiful.
That's always a mark in its favour for me. The only mark in its favour. That's the only thing I ever look at. So yeah, I'm already interested because it looks nice. So
yeah, definitely. So yes, it'd be a good game. Hopefully I can get the advanced version played, and then hopefully do a video review. Now I've got a new little studio set up.
Ace.
So that's what we've been playing. Now you put some news in.
Yeah. I've been proactive and put a couple of bits of news in. One was a week ago, so we'll cover that one off first. It was the annual review of Kickstarter's performance. And it was interesting to hear that Kickstarter has increased the tabletop division of Kickstarter has increased again this year. So it's quite incredible. Every year it seems to go up and up and up. So in 2018, it raised a total of $165.3 million on Kickstarter, which is up 20% from the $137 in 2017. So it's just growing, you know, the market. It shows, I think, that the tabletop market, not just on Kickstarter, but in general, is increasing dramatically year on year. And it just happens to be on Kickstarter because, you know, as we know, tons of the top games, especially the expensive ones, tend to be on Kickstarter as well, which probably helps. Yeah, it was just very interesting, especially when you look at the overall stats. On Kickstarter in total, it was $564 million raised across all categories. So when you look at the tabletop gaming total of 165, that's pretty close to, not quite 20% of the total of Kickstarter across all the entirety of Kickstarter. That's pretty impressive.
It's amazing. I bet you the people that were coming up with this idea probably got told loads of times, oh, this will never work. This will fall flat on its face.
Oh, Kickstarter are just lapping it. I mean, considering what they make something like 10% of every project or whatever. Yeah, they turned over $56 million last year. It's like they're laughing. It's great. It's a great idea as well because they've got almost zero exposure for that as well. It's literally just going, here's a thing. On your head be it.
This is it. They don't have to do... Well, they have to keep the site maintained and make sure they've got enough server power and things like that. But, I mean, what more do they have to do? They're not responsible for projects not funding or not being delivered.
Yeah.
They're not responsible for how your project is done. It's all down to the user doing all that information and setting it all up and being the community manager and things like that. They just sit there and say, yep, keep bringing that money in. Bringing that in, that's fine. Oh, look, another Simon game going up. That's another couple of million in our pocket.
Colossal Games are going up. Oh yeah, great, there's another one. Yeah, I mean, it is crazy. It is interesting. I mean, when I first started using Kickstarter, it was definitely not tabletop gaming that I was looking at. It was more technology, sort of high tech stuff that I was interested in. But pretty much every single technology thing I've had or backed on Kickstarter has been really quite disappointing, apart from one exception, which are my security cameras, which are awesome. But the everything else has been either never turned up or turned up and it was crap. But the tabletop stuff is okay. There are some quality issues. As like, if I look back at all the Kickstarter projects I've backed, let's have a quick look at my shelves now. How many of them have I actually still got? Very quick poll. I can immediately see 2, 3, 4. I can see 4 games that were on Kickstarter that I still own. 5, Near and Far. Bumblebee, 6. but then bearing in mind I'm looking at about 120 games, you know, that's 6 out of that lot. And I've probably backed about 50 odd. So the hit rate is probably the same as my technology ones, really. It's just that I've backed shed loads more of the tabletop ones. It's just interesting. Interesting stuff.
It is. I mean, I think my hit rates are appalling. I've done over 100 backings. And I don't think I've got many left.
Mm.
But I still get pulled in.
Yeah.
Just like at the minute, new expansion to Western Legends is out there. It's just like, yeah, okay, I'm in.
Yeah.
Do it all. And the neoprene gaming mat. On there, all right, I'll give you another $30 of my money.
Yeah,
so just don't tell the wife.
It's like crack addicts, it's just you can't help yourselves. There's only one due out this year that I'd be, I think, tempted with. I suppose two. There's Paladins of the West Kingdom, which is the sequel to Architects of the West Kingdom, which I'd be tempted with, probably, depending on how it shapes up. And then the other one is 1001 Odysseys. Which is due, I think it just launches in a couple of days, but it's like a spacey version of Tales of the Arabian Nights a little bit, where it's just a kind of crazy multi-branching sort of sci-fi story type one. So that's kind of, I'm interested to see exactly what the game is related to on that, but that one's probably going to be an expensive one, and I'm hoping that I'll be able to convince my mate Darren to back that instead.
Yeah, I'm becoming a little bit more picky with my backings, because I'm now looking at it as like, well, that'd be out on retail, so I don't really need to get that.
Yeah, no, exactly. I'm definitely doing that more. I think if I look back to last year or in the last 12 months or something, I'm just gonna have a very quick look and have a look at my backed projects. Let's have a look here quickly. sugar, wrong password. Nah. How do I not remember my password for Kickstarter? That's ridiculous. I've got... Oh, that one's arrived. I can tick that one. And since last year, I backed... in terms of games, I backed 2 games last year. Oh, 4. No, 4. 4 would have been backed last year. So Welcome to Dino World, which is the Dino Roll and Write game. Ancient World, and it's not even the back, I just bought the replacement components for the second edition, because I've got the first edition already. Fleet the Dice game, which I've already talked about, and an expansion for Valeria Card Kingdoms. That's it, that's all I backed last year. So we'll see. I think that's a marked improvement on previous years. I don't know if there's going to be as much this year. So I think you're right, it's like so much stuff that comes on Kickstarter, unless it's the giant ones, they're generally going to be coming to retail. I would have backed like the Planetarium expansion that was out last year, for instance, but I'm just going to wait for that to come out on retail or appear on secondhand Facebook selling groups or whatever.
Mm.
I just don't feel the need to kind of be first in line for a lot of this stuff now. Which I think is healthier for my bank balance, if nothing else.
I say I'm trying to be more picky. I've just counted. I've done over 20 backings of board games last year.
Since January the 1st.
since that was last year.
Yeah.
That's quite bad. And
if in 2017 you backed 40, then you've halved the amount you was backing. So
doubt it. that's quite bad. That's not including my dollar backings of games that I kind of just back for a dollar and then I say, I'll wait and give it more thought later on.
Yeah. I must admit, I did that with one last year. It was the Tidal Blades game.
Oh, yeah.
Which looks amazing in terms of the artwork and presentation and stuff, but having watched a playthrough of it, I'm just kind of... I've got a feeling it's going to be so ludicrously over the top
yeah.
in terms of complication and variance that I just don't know if I'm going to enjoy it.
I think Chris might be in on Retailer. I think he was talking to him about it.
Mm.
So there might be a chance that he might have it in like that. Unless they come up with a real good deal for him,
yeah.
like in the sense that he doesn't need to pay for everything up front. He doesn't usually do that stuff, but yeah. We'll see what comes in. I mean, I've also seen this new trade of Kickstarter exclusive only stuff, which was the one of the ones I'd done was Monumental,
right? Yeah,
and that was Kickstarter's Lonely. There was Batman. And just recently, the Avalon game from Awakened Realms, Aetherian Legends.
Yeah, yeah.
Like so there's a lot of companies just going that way. It's like, yeah, it's just for Kickstarter. We're not going to bother with retail. So, so yes, that's another thing. Interesting. Mm. I found this morning Fog of Love, that two player. Game of being in a relationship, slightly weird, and they're coming out with their second game, Midlife Crisis, which sounds quite funny actually. And how that plays so far, the information we have is it's a four-player game where two-player plays in teams, controlling a character of one side of a relationship, and they are basically trying to make the character fulfill objectives with like private information of their side, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got like objectives to do. There might be a couple of cooperative kind of objectives, but they're basically just trying to be selfish, arrogant people and make their person survive the midlife crisis. I don't know if their relationship's got to survive, but hey, everyone for themselves at this point. But yes, I'm quite intrigued with that. I'm actually really intrigued. I'm still playing Fog in Love, and I'm trying to find a decent, cheap copy so me and my missus can get divorced.
God.
there was one reporter. She, I think she works for a New York newspaper, and she got sent the game and played it with her husband, and they actually did get divorced in real life afterwards.
Oh, man.
Because it brought out the worst of them.
No. That's boring. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those games that is like, I salute the novelty of you choosing a very interesting, different theme in the same way as like Billy Kerr
yeah.
and those kinds of things. I find it intriguing for the same reason that I like Wingspan and why I like Tavarua, the surfing game, and things like that. I like themes that are very, very different to the ordinary. But that's one that I haven't been able to convince myself I'm that interested in. I think that's it can cut a bit close to the bone, maybe, in some cases. But, yeah.
Well, thankfully, your missus doesn't play board games. So
no, exactly,
can't.
Yeah. But that means I'd have to play it with a bloke. And I'm not entirely sure I'd want to do that either. So, I don't know. It's a very odd thing. But, yeah, everyone I've heard who's played it has said it's really good. So, I'm sure it's... it's an interesting one for sure.
Nice. And you've got, what's this? Digital editions or the following games coming from Direwolf Digital.
Yeah, so it was news a couple of days ago. Direwolf, who are the sort of digital partners of Renegade Games. They did the app for Clank, and they've done Fuse and Lanterns and Lotus and stuff like that. They've announced a raft of big digital releases, some of which are going to hit this year and some very soon. So they kicked it off with Mage Knight, the board game, is going to get a digital version.
Nice.
Root, which is one of the hot games of last year, that's going to get a digital version.
Interesting.
Sagrada, the stained glass dice placement game, that's going to get a digital version. Yellow and Yangtze, which is essentially Tigris and Euphrates 2 from Rainer Knizia. And the big one, for me anyway, is Raiders of the North Sea. And that's going to be coming, apparently, the first quarter of 2019. So, in theory, by the end of March. And that's going to be a full-on online playable digitization of Raiders of the North Sea, the worker placement game from Garfield Games and Renegade Games. So yeah, that's pretty big.
Yeah, I mean, it depends what they say. Sometimes they say, oh, we're bringing out this on Direwolf Digital, but then it's just like a kind of app PAL conversion companion.
No, these are full playable games, and right. they are actually going to be, I don't know if they'll be asynchronous. I'm hoping they'll be asynchronous as well as sort of live.
Well, Root would be good, wouldn't it, if it was asynchronous?
Yeah, and Raiders would be a simple one. Yellow and Yangtze, you know, in theory, they could all be. I mean, Mage Knight's more of a solo game, I guess, so that's an easier one.
Yeah.
Probably
be easier to play.
Yeah, probably.
I played that and it was just mind-blowing, just trying to work out the combat in that. It was just, I liked it. I liked like the way it kind of worked, but like the rules were so complex and the fighting was so complex that it took you a whole night just to try and work out one combat sequence, but... Yeah, that's interesting.
But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that I don't want to say that there's, the digital stuff's going to take away from the tabletop. It certainly won't for me, and it hasn't for any of the games I've got. Apart from maybe Carcassonne, I've still got my original Carcassonne, but I always play the digital version just because it's asynchronous. I can play with my friends, and you know, it's easier. It's going to be interesting. It's just being able to play the games you like in a multitude of different ways. So I'm quite happy.
Cool. Yeah, and you've been furiously typing away on the script.
I had a little idea. It was a little plug for Meeple's Corner because we were talking about it earlier on. And I just wanted, it's kind of partially news and partially announcement-y style. But Chris at Meeple's Corner is now confirmed, hopefully just about confirmed anyway, confirmed for two of them, and I think probably the third, three shows this year. So... listeners probably know that we're always going to be at UK Games Expo, but we're also then going to be attending Roll Dice Gaming in Bristol and Tabletop Gaming Live for a second year at Alexandra Palace in London. So make sure you come and see us there. So just to give you the full roundup, UK Games Expo, which is going to be 31st of May to the 2nd of June. That's at the NEC in Birmingham. Everyone knows about that one. The second one is called Roll Dice Gaming, which is a brand new show coming to Ashton Gate Stadium in Bristol. That will be on Saturday the 6th and Sunday the 7th of July. And the final one is Tabletop Gaming Live, run by the same magazine of the same name, minus the live bit. And that's on 28th and 29th of September in Alexandra Palace in London. There's three shows. The live presence of Meeple's Corner is increasing. And at both of those other two, Roll Dice Gaming and Tabletop Gaming Live, there will be demo tables to play some games with us. So if you do come along, make sure you pop along and come play a game with us.
Awesome. Don't know about the Roll Dice Gaming.
Yeah, that's a...
I feel like I've been left in the dark a bit here.
Yeah, that's literally only been... Chris brought it up about a week or so ago, just trying to see if I was interested, or me and a couple of the others were interested in helping out if he was to get a spot. They were asking for a little bit of money. It was potentially quite expensive, so he wasn't sure, but I think he's managed to work out a deal with them to get a presence there. So I think he's aiming at something like a 5x4 meter stand, so quite a good size. And we'll have a couple of tables there, a bit like we did at Tabletop Gaming Live, where we'll put out a game or two to demo to punters. So, yeah, should be fun.
Cool. Yeah, definitely.
And I'm confirmed to go to all three with any luck, so I'll definitely be at the UK Games Expo and Tabletop Gaming, but in theory I'll be going to Roll Dice Gaming as well. So, yeah, fun.
Me too. I need to find out a roll. I think I might be on holiday. I don't know. Will I be on holiday? Can't think. I'm into holiday in that month sometime. So awesome. So cool. And that is about it. This must be a record show.
Yeah. I said I had about two until about nine-ish, and we're bang on the money, so that's pretty good.
Awesome. Right, let's finish this out here and no one gets in trouble.
Yeah.
So thanks. Thank you to Sam for finally finding his microphone and coming back on the podcast. And thank you lot for listening. Please tune in for the next podcast episode, which will probably be out sometime soon. And check out all our stuff on the blogging site, devondice.co.uk, for all our videos and things like that. Go along to my YouTube site, please like and subscribe to that. That'd be very handy. Big thanks to Meeple's Corner for sponsoring the show. And my name has been Joel Wright, your host and editor of this show. You can find me at The Press Monkey and at Devon Dice UK.
And I've been Sam, and you can find me at Spoon of Milk on Twitter.
Yes, thank you. This has been another excellent Devon Dice podcast. Oh, good night.
Good night, folks.
Oh, knackered.
Done. That was speedy. That last bit was pretty speedy. That was good. Right, I'm just going to stop the recording and...
It's good to get you back on.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It was starting to feel like another Tom.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty bad. Devon Dice 63. Now, I've been conscious that it's just like every time you say a recording, it's like, oh, I really can't. It's like I was finishing work at like, you know, 7-8 o'clock every night during December, and it was just, you know, past that even sometimes. And it was
understandable.
The last thing I want to do is go and sit in front of the computer again for another 2 hours.
Well, yeah, for you, that's a big issue, isn't it? No, that's fine. We both understood, and luckily I had Lewis saving me.
Cool.
And berating games that we're playing. So.
There we go. And now back to trying to sell half my game collection.
No, that's what I'm doing as well.
I'm disappointed by the lack of attention. I'm going to have to go, rather. I was hoping to avoid the national one because I don't want to have to send shit.
No, I don't think you can avoid it. Devon, the Coast to Coast one is like vague of people interested.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got rid of four of them via the Meeple's Corner ones. That was okay. One of the big ones. I just got another two or three big ones to get rid of, and I can afford a radiator.
Is that what you're selling for? You actually need a radiator?
Yeah. One of our posh radiators is broken, and it can't be repaired. So that's a replacement radiator needed.
Can't you claim it back?
Need a new window for our bedroom. So it's all the glamorous stuff.
Yeah,
and I also want to make room for Wingspan. I want to be able to afford that as well. So, got to get my priorities right.
That's what I could get away with when Claire's like, "Why are you getting all this money for the Kickstarters?" I was like, "Selling stuff."
Where are you getting money for the ones that you're buying to sell?
She hasn't asked that question. I was like, "Cool, phew, yeah." I knew that might come next. I was like, "Nope, she's not asked it. I'm good. She'll figure it out soon." Hold on a minute. You needed money to buy it in the first place.
Yeah.
So, yes. It is stressful, especially when they say, I'll take it, and then you organise it, and then they come back. So, is it this one? What has it got this bit in it? Oh, why are you asking questions now? You just said you'll take it. Things like that. And I was just like, And I had one yesterday. She said, I'll take this, and this game. How much? So I deducted all the postage cost off of two games and said, all right, so it'd be this much. Okay, I'll think about it. I was like, well, you can see the prices. I don't know what more you're expecting, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
I did get one trade earlier on. I decided I didn't really want to do trades because I want to try and get some money for a start, but I'm getting rid of Pillars of the Earth and I'm going to get back finally Brewcrafters, which I kind of regret having traded away before.
Brewcrafters?
So, yeah, the brewery worker placement, brewery building game.
All right.
I quite like that. And I had a bad experience playing a two-player game at a credit and game night when I got really drunk and in a rage, traded it away almost instantly.
Oh, wow.
So I need to correct that decision a little bit. But yeah, got that sorted. I keep getting people asking for trades from America and stuff. It's just like, go away. It's going to cost me like 30 quid just to send it.
Oh, what, over the geek?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Oh, that's like going on then.
Yeah. No, just like, Board Game Geek trades, just Americans going, oh, yeah, I'll pay for the shipping. It's just like, oh, I just can't be bothered, mate. Just go away.
Yeah. I'm really struggling to get rid of some games, and I've just decided now if I can't get rid of them before UK Games Expo, I put them in the bring and buy really cheap, and if they ain't sold, I leave them there, and they can do whatever they want with them. I'm not bringing them home again.
No.
So
I might try it for the first time this year. I might put a few in, see what happens.
I thought you've always done it, haven't you?
Huh?
I thought you've always done it.
No. I've always gone in and had a look to see if there's anything I want to buy, but I've never actually put anything in to sell.
All right.
So I might do that this time and see what happens. See what I've got. It's whether I can be bothered with it all.
It's easy putting it in.
Yeah. It's
afterwards trying to find them again to take them if not sold.
Yeah.
That's why I'm just saying I'm going to put them in at really cheap. If they don't go, then I'm just leaving them there because I'm not wasting my time and energy trying. And if I can't sell them there at cheap price, then where else am I going to sell them at a cheap price and lose out? So.
Exactly. Well, I've got a bunch of stuff I'd sell for like a fiver or something like that.
Mm.
So I'll just take all that crap and see what happens. But we'll see. I suppose either that or you give it to the auction guy. That's one of the ways to do it, I suppose. Never done that either.
Yeah. They'll probably go in there and buy a load of it. That's cheap anyway.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Cool.
Right.
Well, I'm gonna head off. I shall catch you later on.
Yeah. All right, dude.
Sweet. Catch you later, man.
Bye.